Hey everybody, this is Shaman Sister Sin, and you are listening to the Meditations and More podcast brought to you by littleshaman.com. Today I want to talk to you about living with borderline personality disorder. Borderline personality disorder may be one of the most misunderstood disorders that there is. Borderline patients often seem perfectly fine until something happens that causes them to feel rejected or abandoned, and that's when all hell breaks loose. And sometimes it doesn't stop until some serious damage has been caused to relationships, material belongings, even their own bodies. But why? That's what we're going to talk about today. Why do they react so intensely to what seems like no provocation at all? What is going on inside the borderline patient to cause such extreme emotional outbursts? We're going to explain that today because today we have a special guest. We're going to do an interview with somebody who suffers from borderline personality today. So I'm going to allow my guest to introduce himself. Go right ahead.
Hi, my name is I currently suffer from borderline personality disorder after being diagnosed about 6 years ago, somewhere around that time. And I've been taking medication and trying to deal with this type of issue ever since.
Thank you very much for being here today.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me on your show.
Well, let's jump right into it then. A lot of times, the main characteristic of borderline personality is characterized as a fear of abandonment or a fear of rejection. Would you say that that's a fair characterization?
Oh, most definitely. It's always been hard as far as relationships and holding down jobs and everything like that. Basically to the point where, you know, I can't even work. I mean, I do okay at first and then it's just, you know, the thoughts keep circling and circling and circling to the point you get paranoid about things, and you basically, to where I guess you cause what you're afraid of, I guess is the best way to say it. They call it self-fulfilling prophecy, but, you know, at the time you're not really aware of it when it happens until all of a sudden it happens, and then in retrospect you're like, oh yeah, okay, but it's already too late, the damage is done, and then it just goes on to the next thing.
Now, you mentioned paranoia, which I think a lot of times when we discuss borderline personality disorder, that isn't fully explored. Would you say that the paranoia is a key feature of borderline personality disorder, and what types of things do you become paranoid about or afraid of?
Almost definitely. My problem is that I'm in a constant state of fear about something. You know, afraid of my marriage ending, to afraid that, you know, something's not going to work out as planned, to how am I going to get a ride to the store? The fear is always, it's always the same type of magnitude as far as it goes, to the point to where it just turns into full-blown anxiety, and then you start lashing out at other people.
So are you saying that you don't necessarily experience levels of fear? You specifically don't feel levels of fear, as in your fear of worrying about your marriage ending is the same as your fear about something that's not quite as important?
It kind of all depends. With me in particular, some days are easier to deal with than others. Like some days, it's all the same as far as the magnitude of fear, and to where it's like really hard to cope with it, you know, medication or not. Other days, it's easier to kind of roll off. So, like, you know, you're thinking, yeah, and it's like you feel it, the anxiety building up some days, and you're just like, okay, I got this. But then other days, you wake up, and it's just from the time you wake up till the time you go to bed, it's just one big constant state of panic, and you're just like, want to shoot yourself in the head just to get it over with, you know?
That brings up another key feature of borderline personality disorder, which is the suicide attempts and the suicidal feelings. Can you talk about that? Is there a way you can explain it for people who might not understand?
Well, I mean, might as well get all the skeletons out.
If you're not comfortable, you don't have to talk about it. That's okay.
No, that's okay. Because it's one of those things where it's not as bad as it used to be, so... But at least in my experience, as far as, you know, dealing with those type of things, as long as I can remember, I dealt with all kinds of suicidal ideations and thoughts and attempts, I guess you could say. I don't want to say tendencies because I'm still alive, but there's times I would attempt it almost every day, being a lot younger, like adolescent. When I was an adolescent, I couldn't understand things. I couldn't understand who I was or why I was the way I was. And to me, it felt normal, but I couldn't really realize that it wasn't. And dealing with the frustration and not lack of understanding or all these type of things, just it gets to be too much and too much and too much. And like I said, you just want to just end it just to get it over with. And that carried out a lot. I'd say actually it carried all the way up until like maybe the past year or so. Now I still deal with it, the suicide thing, every once in a while. Like, you know, if like pressure gets to be too much, or the pressure and anxiety of trying to cope and deal with certain situations. And I mean, I still self-harm every now and then. That's just a way of coping with that. It's just self-harm. And I mean, I know it sounds childish and so like 13-year-old girlish, but at the same time, you know, I mean, that's just, you feel how you feel and you do what you do to try to relieve that feeling.
We often will hear it say that one of the reasons for feeling suicidal in borderline personality disorder is that the person needs to feel that there's an escape from their problems. And going by what you've just said, it seems like that's what you're saying. Would you agree that that is where the suicide feelings come from? They're almost sort of comforting.
Oh, very. That's pretty much in a nutshell what I'm trying to say, yeah. Is that the ideation is an escape. I mean, that's the whole thing about borderline, is that you're dealing with all this crap that all you're trying to do is just, you like basically spend your whole life trying to distract yourself from it. Whether it be a job, to where all of a sudden the pressures from the job become part of the disease, relationships, same thing. And then, you know, to where like you use internet and video games and television. I mean, before you know it, you're using all forms of media to basically distract yourself from that. And in a sense, me personally, medication doesn't, it works to a point, because I take Trileptal. That's the only medication that's worked for me. Any other medication, it just makes it worse. So Trileptal, it helps as far as maintaining to where, you know, the anxiety and the issues that come with borderline, it's not as intense. You still feel it, but it's not as intense.
And I don't mean to interrupt you, but just in case anyone doesn't understand, what exactly is Trileptal? Is it an antipsychotic, or what is it?
Anti-seizure medication that's used for actually all kinds of mental illness. They try not to prescribe it as much now because of all the new medications they try to push on people. That's, you know, the bureaucracy of pharmaceuticals, whatever. That's a different show. But Trileptal is an anti-seizure medication. It is done wonders for me. I mean, me taking it, it's night and day. When I don't take it, anybody that knows me notices. And plus, also, I smoke marijuana, not like stoner level where I smoke all day, every day. I'd say I smoke like just a few hits at night, and it helps as far as the intensity too, along with it. It's like the perfect kind of combination.
Well, that leads us right into what I was going to ask you, which is, before you were diagnosed and got on medication, obviously you suffered from this illness for probably most of your life. So how did you deal with that before you got on medication? Did you self-medicate with drugs and alcohol, or?
Before I met my wife, yeah. And then when I met my wife, I basically quit doing drugs and alcohol because I didn't think it was any good for me. When the only way I was dealing with it from the time I met my wife until I found out my diagnosis and started taking Trileptal was just basically take it all out on her. And I made her life a living hell, which wasn't right. And once we figured out the problem actually was to where it could actually start being treatable, and even then, any kind of treatment, it's been like so gradual and so long after you get into this rabbit hole, because I didn't even realize that that's what I was doing.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit more, because that is, of course, one of the big things that people listening are going to want to know about. Why does borderline personality disorder have the effect on relationships that it has? So can you talk about that, the paranoia, the rages, things like that?
Well, the fear of abandonment and paranoia, I mean, like, I'll just say it to you from somebody that knows, that actually, that has it. Psychology tries to use the term non. The non doesn't know what the borderline does, whatever. So let me tell you someone that does. Like, if I'm not on my medication, I think my wife is cheating on me constantly. And just like a Facebook message talking politics with a guy, she's cheating, or, you know, things like that. And I'm trying not to sound humorous about it because it's not funny. So basically, I'm always thinking that she was always cheating, or she was always going to leave me because I know there's something wrong with me. And so she's going to think there's something wrong with me, and she's just going to bolt, which she never did. God bless her. She stuck through all my bull. She deserves the Nobel Peace Prize for even dealing with me, honestly. And it would get really bad. I would get so paranoid that, and I would just take it out and I would lash it out because I would be in such denial as far as me and how my behavior was, that I would just project it onto her, and it would get so bad to the point to where I would be violent. I would just, not only physically but emotionally, financially, I mean, all forms. You know, I mean, it got really bad. And then after the dust clears, and I hate to sound cliche, but like after the mad season or the whole storm kind of goes away, and then all of a sudden you're rational again after it's all out of your system, then you're like, oh crap, what did I do? Oh my god. And you would feel so bad, because in retrospect, you know, you feel bad for how you acted and what you did to this poor woman, or, you know, if you're a female borderline, you know, the poor man or whatever. And you would just feel so bad about it. And then all of a sudden, the next day, something just triggers it, and before you know it, you're right back where you were like the day before.
And that brings up a good point, because it's something we hear about a lot with borderline personality disorder, is something that's called splitting, where the borderline's partner is seen as either all good or all bad. Can you talk about that and how that comes into play in relationships?
I believe there's two aspects of splitting, actually. One, like what you're talking about, where, yeah, I mean, my wife is either goddess or she's the demon. It's like it just all depends on the situation. She could be a goddess one moment, and then all of a sudden, like I said, she'll be talking to this guy on Facebook, and then she's a freaking demon, and you don't care about me, blah, blah, blah. But then there's all, you know, it's really hard to deal with. And then there's the other side of splitting, where in the borderline's mind, it's like the same concept inside the borderline's mind that a lot of times even borderlines are in denial of, where it's just a constant war of like good and evil inside their mind. It's like their entire brain is just the angel and the devil just freaking duking it out every single moment. The borderline's like caught in the middle of it, just like completely indecisive. And why? Because they don't want to make the wrong decision, and they're afraid of making the right decision too, or what they think is the right decision will be the wrong decision, and that goes along with the paranoid, like I said. So that's another aspect of what I call as far as splitting.
So then the paranoia really is a larger feature than perhaps some might realize.
Way, way larger.
At least for you.
For my story, yes. I don't know about other borderlines. I don't really talk to other borderlines. So, you know, I try to do the group thing. It ain't for me. I see it, dude. You got some wars you gotta fight on your own, because sometimes you can't trust the soldiers, you know, like you trust anybody else.
Well, and that's another aspect of borderline personality disorder that we really see, is the lack of trust. Would you say that that's a key feature of the paranoia? It's a lack of trust, and where does that come from? What is the reason?
That's a little hard to say, because that kind of goes way back. I mean, dude, I could give a million reasons that sound like excuses, or a million excuses that may be reasons. I try not to differentiate between the two, because that just drives me mad. So, I mean, I could sit there and say, well, it's my mom and dad, or I felt like friends were screwing me. I don't know. All I know is that somewhere in there, I just wasn't able to trust people. And, I mean, I'm a little bit better about it now, but I'm also afraid to be too trusting at first. So, the entire idea of trust is just kind of like, it's got more variables than algebra to me.
Is that where the rage comes from? You know, we always hear about narcissistic rage, borderline rage. Can you talk a little bit about what causes the rage, where it comes from?
Well, to me, the rage comes from, you know, fear of abandonment and denial. Like I said, you're basically taking all these things you're thinking about yourself, knowing that the way you behave is a piece of crap, and you're projecting it onto other people. And it just keeps intensifying until you can't handle it, and then you just come so freak. All you can do is just see red. So, and usually the rage is it's blind. Like, you know, when you got, I don't know about narcissists, but as far as like borderline rage, it's so blind, dude. Like, you know, you're running off at the mouth, and there's like no edit button, no like pre-thought, no nothing. It's just mind the mouth, mind the mouth, mind the mouth.
Is it your goal to hurt the other person, or are you just speaking from hurt, or how does that, do you even know?
To me, it's speaking from hurt, because you're not really, you're not in the moment with the borderline rage. There's like absolutely no empathy whatsoever. The empathy kicks in when it's over with, but when it happens, you're speaking from hurt, whether you're hurting yourself or you feel like you're being victimized by the other person. All I know is I go by how I feel. And the thing is that that's a weird thing about borderline, is that you don't really, the borderline doesn't realize they're a borderline. They think to them it's normal. They think the amplification of emotions they feel is normal.
Did you notice a difference into quote more normal emotions when you got on the medication that you say helps you?
It lowers the intensity, but as far as the actual emotions I feel, I'm not sure. Because when I'm not taking my medicine, it's like I said, and I mean, it takes like a day or two, and then sometimes it's overnight. So like I said, it's one of those things where some days are better than others.
So you don't feel that the medication has a huge impact on, I mean, I guess I can't really use the word normal, more like if it's easier for you to control your emotions when you take medication.
Right, you still feel the emotions, you're able to hold on to it better than like some days where you wake up and you just like you can't even grab it. If that makes any sense. Like take for example, the other day, you know, I woke up and thank God everybody else was sleeping. I woke up like I'd say like 4 hours before everybody else, and it was just like, you know, I don't know why, but I was just completely anxious and just couldn't even sit still, to where I had to take like an extra pill.
I'd like to interject here and say that I do not promote anybody not following the directions from their doctor on their medication.
No, this is something that works for me, and then what works for me might not work for other people. Do keep that in mind. In case anybody wonders, I take like 300-600 milligram tablets a day. It's like an extremely high dosage. And I was told that I could take 4 if I wanted to. My doctor told me that. I wouldn't recommend going like that off the pat, though. It took almost a year just to, like, work my way up to that quote-unquote therapeutic level.
But what is the reason why you take that much? Is it because it took a year because you took one and it wasn't working well enough and then you took 2 like that?
Well, kind of how it went was that when I first started taking it, it was a very low dosage. And how it went was that, which I'm sure some people might understand as far as this goes, is that you take it, if it seems to work, it'll work for a couple weeks, then you need to raise it a little bit, then it'll work for a couple more weeks, then you gotta raise it, until you're at a level where you can keep taking it and you don't have to raise it. It just turns out in my situation, it turned out to be basically the highest dosage pill, you know, 3 times a day, which I take like 2 at night and then 1 during the day. And if I need to, I can take an extra one, and my doctor says it's cool.
And why is it that you don't take another medication in conjunction with Trileptal? I know that many people are on multiple medications, so why are you only on one?
Because every other medication didn't work. I've tried doing the Geodon thing. It made my condition way worse. Way worse. It gave me, like, the opposite effect. I was, like, in the bathroom screaming half the time.
Is there a way you can give us a list of the medications that you have tried?
I can try. No, it's fine. Let's see. First thing I started out with went... Because I've had, like, all different kinds of diagnoses before borderline personality disorder. Bipolar, PTSD, because of my paranoia, I've been diagnosed as schizophrenic.
Those three things right there are very, very commonly confused with borderline personality disorder, and people are often misdiagnosed as bipolar, schizophrenic, or as having PTSD when in fact they are borderline.
Yeah, that's very true. Let's see, bipolar with psychotic features, I labeled that one.
Do you feel that the psychotic features came from the paranoia and the rage that doesn't seem to fit with the situation? Is that where the psychotic features came from?
Kind of, and also, like, the psychotic features, the bipolar psychotic features and the schizo diagnosis, I was an adolescent taking a lot of hallucinogens at the time, which I think made my conditions a lot worse, like, in the moment. So expand your mind and make it harder on everybody else. As far as medications were concerned, let's see, I've taken Wellbutrin, Meloril, Risperidone, Seroquel, Lithium, Zoloft, Prozac, Depakote, Lexapro, and then finally, when my wife and one doctor that actually specializes in borderline personality disorder, which I didn't realize at the time, my wife, you know, wrote down basically a nice, well-put letter as far as my symptoms and my behaviors to where, you know, I couldn't bullshit the doctor because me, I gotta bullshit that I'm a good guy and there's nothing wrong. Well, come on, let's be real here. You know, let's be real. So, and that's basically the best thing as far as anybody that is a borderline or anybody that's even going to get a diagnosis from a doctor. Let the spouse write down the truth and any real symptoms and everything as far as the person's behavior, symptoms, whatever. And then you give that paper to the doctor because trust me, it will help you more than you will think. And as far as getting a real diagnosis, because I mean, the doctor says, let's hear from you, not your spouse, but he's going to take your spouse into consideration.
Well, that's one of the things that I mentioned in the episode about why therapy is often ineffective for borderline personality disorder. And that was because the behavior that we would look at and say, okay, this person has borderline personality disorder, is not necessarily going to show up in a therapy session.
That's one of the biggest misconceptions. And I think this goes for borderlines and narcissists. Borderline and narcissist is of the mind, okay, I'll shut him or her up. I'll do this to shut him or her up. Oh, they think I need help, that I got something wrong with me. Then, okay, I'll go to the psychologist, I'll go to the therapist, whatever it is, and shut her up. At first, when my wife thought that I was borderline, I don't think I've ever really admitted this to her, or maybe I did, but I didn't really believe her because just how detrimental it actually sounded. But I went ahead and went with the program and, you know, went to the doctor, and that's when the doctor started me on Trileptal. And decided to go see a therapist, which I think at first it was just, you know, to kind of keep everything cool until the therapist kind of was, he was one of those therapists that basically said that had, I guess you could say, misinformation as far as borderlines were concerned. You know, like, oh, it's just a woman's disease. Men don't really get it. You know, your wife, blah, blah, blah. And then I would come home and just take it all out on her. I think he ended up being disbarred. As far as I remember.
So what you're saying is that the therapist sort of fed into your beliefs that it wasn't true in the first place.
Right. Exactly. And so, and I don't think I even saw a therapist for a while after that. And until we ended up moving. And then when we moved, I kind of wanted to get a fresh start. And so I started taking it a lot more seriously. You know, I just figured if I take my medications, I'm okay, but it takes a lot more than that. You got to take your therapy seriously. And I've gone through a lot of therapists, and it's not, I think in like the past, what, 3-4 years, I've gone through like 10 of them, and it's not really so much that they can't deal with me. A lot of them are just kind of like part-time therapists in government places because, you know, I can't really afford to see like a $200 an hour therapist. You know, I'm poor, which I'm sure a lot of mentally ill people are, and they get stuck going to these government places where they see part-time therapists, where once they get a real job, they're out the door after, like, you know, a few months, and after you build a rapport, and then you gotta build a rapport with a new therapist, and it becomes a revolving door after a while, and until you can't even really take it seriously anymore.
I was going to ask you, how can you take it seriously when that's the situation?
And that's the thing, you can't. Because, you know, every time you build a rapport, my last therapist, though, I built a rapport with her and I was taking it as seriously as I could. I was being honest. I wasn't bullshitting. I wasn't saying, you know, my wife, I'm perfectly fine. Which I know is what happens with a lot of therapists, and not really borderlines, but just people in general, you know. Everybody tries to blame everybody else and not really take a look at themselves. And what she did was, she decided to take a cell phone call right in the middle of me talking to her. It set me off. And I just yelled at her and walked right out. And just decided, okay, well, I'll try another therapist. And I saw her for a few weeks and then just decided, what's the point? Because all these dime a dozen part-time therapists see, you know, 200 people a week and don't even remember you until you walk in the door. You know, it's what's the point?
I have stated quite a few times on other shows that there are a lot of good therapists, but there are also a lot of bad ones, particularly when it comes to personality disorders. And if the therapist, she was working with you on borderline personality disorder, those were your diagnosis?
Yes, that was my diagnosis.
It would seem that if she were familiar with borderline personality disorder, she would have known better than to answer the phone.
Well, yeah, exactly. Well, my diagnosis now, like the last place I went to, they didn't carry over my borderline diagnosis. Instead, they gave me like some mixed emotion disorder. I don't know. Basically, like a big, I don't know. You know, because the doctor saw me 5 minutes at a time. And so, that's where I decided to go to a different place because I didn't agree with the diagnosis. So if you're not getting the right diagnosis, you're not going to get the right treatment. It was just kind of like, oh, okay, well, I don't know what you have, but this medication works, so here you go. You say it works, okay. And so you go to this other place, and they say, okay, well, yeah, you got borderline personality disorder, anxiety disorder, schizoid affective disorder, and all this other stuff. So if you want, here, you know, you can't hold a job. Go ahead and get on disability. We'll help you. It was just kind of where I'm at because, I mean, I can't hold a job.
What are the specific difficulties that you faced whenever you were working a job, and also what type of work did you do?
Did a lot of factory work, which, like I said, the whole distracting factor was okay, but it's one of those things where you're good for a little while. And my wife can contest, every time I got a decent job working at a factory or something, it went good for a while. I would work a lot of hours, made decent money, we were doing okay, and then as soon as, like, there was a rift somewhere, then all of a sudden, it started blowing up. I mean, by the end of it, I was to the point to where, you know, I was thinking that my bosses were basically secretly going to, like, the corporate about me specifically and complaining about me, trying to get me fired. I was doing my job just as good as the next guy. I was, like, training guys, you know.
What caused that fear? Because something had to cause the fear. Obviously, the fear is that you were going to lose your job. What was the cause of that fear, do you know? Now, in retrospect, looking back, do you know what it was? Situation of maybe just everything's going too good?
Yes. That's exactly what I was going to say. I guess if things are going too good, it's going to fuck up somewhere, because that's what my own experience in life tells me. That if it goes too good, it's going to fuck up somewhere. It doesn't have to be that way, but when I'm thinking that, then I cause it. And like my last job, I was I got so freaking frazzled by it, and plus, you know, rumors about getting the place getting bought out, which has made it even like 5 times as bad. And then so I tried to get another job, in which I got hired at another job, and you know, it was okay. And then it turned out, but it was a place that was just starting up, and the machines weren't even ready yet for like 2 months. After I put in my 2 weeks, they weren't even ready yet. Which they didn't say anything till after I already put in my 2 weeks and quit my job. And after that, boom, it was like a huge break. Which I, you know, it took me months to get over that. It was like so bad. I was like trying to walk from Pennsylvania to St. Louis, like with one backpack and a box of Pop-Tarts and 2 energy drinks. It sounds silly and it sounds funny, and I mean, dude, honest to God, but let me tell you, that's where I was at. That's psychotic. It broke.
And
couldn't take
when
it.
How did you figure out that you were at a bad place at that time? How far did you walk, or how did it come about that you realized, okay, I need help because this has gone too far?
Well, that's where, like I said, my wife deserves a peace prize because I mean, it was so bad. I mean, I was so irate, and I mean, because when I get too irate, I get, you know, my wife kicks me out, rightfully so, if it's too irate, because, you know, she shouldn't have to deal with it, neither should my son. He shouldn't have to see, you know, me acting all crazy and irate like that. Once I'm cool, I can come back. But this was a situation where I just straight lost it. And not only that, the kind of factory work I was working at, I didn't take my medication for a year. And I think that had a lot to do with it too. Because as far as, you know, I was doing good for like 6 to 8 months without taking my medicine, because my medicine makes me really subdued. And the type of job I was working at, I was working with 3 machines at a time. And even when I was taking my medicine, I was cranking like 4 or 5 energy drinks a night just to keep up. That alone, you know, nothing wrong with a monster every now and then, but dude, that much in a short period of time, it's maddening. It's a mad ball, man.
I've heard quite a bit about how bad they are for people with certain illness and personality disorders, actually.
It's okay in moderation, but the thing is, it's as addictive as speed, too, sometimes. Like I said, in a job like that, where you're working on 3 machines, plus you're trying to train other people, it's just, you were working the job of 3 people at that job, and it was so hard to keep up, so I quit taking my medicine because it was making me so subdued, which, at first, it was okay. But then, like I said, and it's so gradual, you don't really notice it until it's already too late. And then by the time the break happened, and you're walking, and you're like freaking about ready to just, you know, jump off a bridge or whatever, dude. I mean, you know, I remember I started texting my wife. I was so irate and so out of it. And she's like, well, what are you doing? And I told her what I was doing. And she said, dude, all right, you know what? Okay. She goes, you can't do this. She basically kind of like talked me down and said, you know what, you need to come home, you need to calm down, you need to come home, we need to talk about this. Basically kind of, if you don't get your head out of your ass, you're gonna have to go to the hospital, because what you're doing is not good. She goes, you're talking about walking for 8 days with hardly any food or water and no money. You don't see something wrong with that. And I mean, eventually, you know, I listened to reason, and I mean, yeah, until I came back, and then we talked about it, and I mean, it took a long time for me to get over that. In fact, I still kind of don't feel the same since that point. I don't mind even being on disability, because obviously, the type of work I can do, obviously, I can't, because the way that my medicine makes me so tired all the time, and I can't afford to pop 5 energy drinks a day to keep up, and still... And basically it counteracts the medicine in the end anyway.
So essentially you're on disability because you need to take your medication in order to not feel suicidal, but you can't work because of the medicine.
Well, that and plus also my job history. I've gone through like 20 jobs in my entire life. And apparently that's like a big red flag as far as disability goes. It shows you can't really even hold down a job.
If you could say one thing to people who have borderline personality disorder or to their families, what would it be?
Get on medicine first. That's like the most important thing. Get on medicine and get on the right medicine. When you're not on medicine, and trust me, being borderline, I was in such denial for years over this. But then looking back on it after being on medicine for so long, you see that you may think you're all right, but you're not. Taking medication, it lowers the amplification, and it also helps you cope so much better with the issues that you may not even realize that you have until you're on medicine. If you have a loved one, talk with them about this. Tell them to be honest with you. I've seen situations where they basically just, the spouse will just give in and just like go along with whatever the borderline says, basically just to end the freaking argument, which is a huge mistake because all you're doing is just giving in to their denial. Be real. If you have a spouse or a loved one or a living girlfriend or boyfriend or whatever that you've been with for years, that you have for children, whatever, someone that, or at least, you know, even a best friend, talk with them about this and tell them to be honest and be real. Because those kind of people, if they care about you, they will. If they care about you, they will. And if they think that you need help, just ask them, do you think I need help? And they'll tell you, you know what, maybe you do need to see somebody. It doesn't have to be like a mean conversation. There doesn't have to be any negativity or animosity. That's not involved as far as being real and honest. Just have an open mind about it. And you need to let go of this, you know, I don't have any kind of those problems. Because, dude, you might, and you just don't know. Because all you're doing is being blinded by scapegoating everybody else. That's the best advice I can give.
Do you have any advice for anybody with borderline personality disorder or someone who's trying to cope with a loved one who has borderline personality disorder about trying to deal with the rages?
Me personally, I'm on the other end of it, so I can't really like tell people what to do as far as in that situation because everybody handles things differently. All I can do is just say don't give in and give it and have it in early. If you love your spouse and you want him to get better, be real with him and be honest. And that's like the key to any relationship. That's the key to any friendship, marriage, intimate relationship of any sort. Be honest and be real. As far as controlling the rage, keep taking your medications. Medicinal marijuana and mental health is actually getting a really close look nowadays. And it's also a reason why medicinal marijuana is being so widespread and accepted nowadays because of mental health, as well as cancer treatment and everything else. And I'm not going to go into a huge rant about it, but I mean, in my own situation, it does help. It might help with you as far as curbing the anxiety and kind of giving a clear mind about things. Because I know when I smoke, everything's so much better and it's better the next day. And then in the moment, just take a deep breath. If you have to, take a walk. If you feel like your mind is running so much in circles and you feel that anxious and that dizziness or that light feeling in your mind, go take a walk. Go see a movie, whatever. Do what you do when you're going out. Go to the bus station, mess around on your phone for an hour or so. Whatever. Whatever it is you do, do what you do. And then come back when cooler heads prevail and then try to talk about it.
Do you have any advice for trying to ensure that the anxiety doesn't build up to a point where there is an explosion?
If you're honest with yourself, you'll feel when it's coming. And it's up to you to know how to deal with that. It's not your wife that's causing the trigger. The trigger lies inside you, and it's up to you and how to deal with that. You're living with a disease. Being the borderline, and this goes with anybody with mental illness, it's your responsibility as far as how you cope with those triggers or just how you cope with the illness altogether. It's not up to your environment to try to make you happy. You gotta make yourself happy and you gotta keep yourself in check. Not everybody else keep you in check. Why should everybody have to walk around eggshells? Why should you have to put eggshells around for people to step on anyway? That's just how I see it.
Thank you very much for that insight. We've enjoyed having you on the show, and we hope that you will come back and visit us again.
Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to the Meditations and More podcast with me, the Little Shaman, brought to you by littleshaman.com. May the Great Spirit bless you, and have a wonderful evening.